you're absent here. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we certainly are going to spend this evening talking to Lindsay Williams. And Lindsay Williams was the chaplain on the pipeline that was built in Alaska between 1974 and 1977, but he was up there before the pipeline was going in, and he managed to convince the people who were building the pipeline that they needed a chaplain on the pipeline. Now, he has an amazing story to tell about the oil that is really available up on the north slope of Alaska, just off Prudhoe Bay. But the thing is that they are creating a massive shortage of oil. This has been planned for a long time. They had actually put in wells in a place called Gull Island in 1976. Well, I'll let Lindsay tell you a lot more about that. Now, how does that deal with what's going on today? Well, as many of you know, the Hurricane Rita has now changed course and is heading towards all the oil refineries there, major oil refineries there, just up to the east of Houston. Not only that, but if you look at the map of the oil platforms, probably the highest density of oil platforms anywhere in the continental United States is right in the path of Hurricane Rita. And if the hurricane with winds of 148 miles an hour wipes out those platforms as well as Katrina did over by New Orleans, we're going to have real problems with our oil production here in the United States, because somewhere between 30 and 40% of our oil production is down in the Gulf of Mexico. You see, we are not allowed to drill for oil off our shores. We're not allowed to drill for oil in Alaska and the Gull Island Reserve that Lindsay's going to tell us about. We have lots of oil. But you see, we haven't developed it, and we haven't developed it very intentionally, because there's been an organized, orchestrated effort to convince the American people. We have peak oil. We peaked our production in 1971, both for oil and natural gas. We're on the decline. The world supply is running out. The price is going to go up. We're going to have to change our way of life. And that is exactly what the internationalists want us to believe. So let's get then, not from what we're supposed to believe, what we're told, what you're going to find on the Internet. Let's get away from Hubert's Peak and peak oil. And let's talk to Lindsay William, who has an entirely different story, which I believe to be true because I've checked it off with one of the people who was with Lindsay when they were building the pipeline, when the largest oil field in the Western Hemisphere, perhaps one of the largest ones in the world, came in 1976. And it has never been developed. And the question is, why? Lindsay, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Dr. Stan, thank you for the privilege of being on your program at a time when the price of gasoline at the gas pump is the highest it's ever been in the history of the world. In fact, I was shocked today as I went to my computer and looked up Bloomberg newsletter, one of the most respected in the industry, and it said, this could be the next Pearl Harbor. I almost shuddered to think about what they were talking about. Hurricane Rita, right on the heels of Katrina, Texas is the home of the biggest concentration of U.S. refineries. 20% or 26% of the nation's total supply is there. Between 15 to 20% of the nation's refinery capacity is at risk from this new hurricane. It will take at least 1.5 to 2 weeks before there can be any comeback whatsoever if there's a flooding in the direction that it's going. It looks like it will
be. Hold that thought right there, Lindsay. Well, this is Dr. Stan. With us is Lindsay Williams. Lindsay picked up the story. Lindsay was telling us of his concern over what the implications of this coming storm will be. Now, of course, this program will be rebroadcast a couple of weeks from now. Then we'll know what the effect of the storm is. But the potential for devastating our oil production and certainly our oil refining on a temporary basis is really devastating. So pick up the story there, Lindsay.
Well, heating oil is 56% higher than it was a year ago. Natural gas, it has doubled in the past 1 year. I mean, Dr. Stan, we are on the verge of everything that you've been talking about for years, and that is that the powers that be wish to take away from us, make us equal to a third world country, and diminish our standard of living. That's exactly what they're doing. But this is what I heard 25 to 30 years ago. In fact, when I had the privilege of being on your show, I think for the first time recently, about 9 months ago, I'd been on there prior to that, but a number of times recently, but 9 months ago I made the statement that gasoline would go to the price of $3 at the gas pump. Oh, everyone, I could almost feel the emotions through the telephone and through the radio program. Now, without any doubt, it's going to $4. In fact, it was said today that there's no question whatsoever but that we can expect $4 after what's taken place back in Louisiana and now in Texas. And I predict that you may as well be prepared for $5 to $6 a gallon at the gas pump, because, you see, that's where it all started with me back 15 years ago when I wrote my book, The Energy Non-Crisis. And someone said to me on a program the other day, a talk show, they said, well, back when you heard all this, did you really expect this to happen today? And I'm quite sure that the talk show hosts expected me to say, no, I really didn't expect this. My response was, sure, I expected this to take place just exactly like it's happening. All they wanted was an excuse to take the price of gasoline to $3, then to $4, then to $5 and $6. It's all a part of their total program. Now, some people would probably say, well, Lindsay Williams, how in the world can you say all of this? I mean, you're making some rather startling statements here. You see, I had the privilege, by the providence of God, of having a position that there is no way in this world that I could have ever been in my shoes where I was, except by the providence of God. Because in 1970, I was a little unknown missionary doing aviation missions in the state of Alaska.
Hold that thought right there, Lindsay, as we bring our other stations right back on board. Well, Lindsay Williams is with us, and Lindsay is telling that back in 1970 he was a missionary in Alaska, flying planes, getting around, to the outlying areas there, and of course bringing the word of God to people. And so, pick up the story there.
Well, Dr. Stan, some people say to me, "Well, Lindsay, did you really expect what's happening today? Did you honestly think that gasoline was going to go to $3, $4, and $5 a gallon?" And I said, "Sure." I knew it. I heard it. And it was only by the providence of God, because I was a little unknown missionary flying aircraft missionary supply, and I heard that they were going to build the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. And I was in Alaska at the time, so I said, my goodness, 25,000 pipeliners going to converge on Alaska to build that 800-mile, 4-foot diameter pipe. So I said, first thing that came to my mind was, Lindsay, as a missionary, you better go help those pipeliners, because I'd heard that they were supposed to be about the most wicked, cussing, just drinking this folks on the face of the earth. And believe you me, that was the understatement of the year. So I went to Alaska Pipeline Service Company, and I said, don't you need a chaplain on the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline? At first they said, we don't know what to do with you, go away. I kept going back and back and back. I guess persistence pays off. And that's exactly what's happening with you too, Dr. Stan. You just keep telling people the truth day after day after day. And persistence after a while is going to pay off because people are listening to you more by the day. So that's what I did. And finally they said, okay, we'll give you the northern seven camps on the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. Go up there and do everything that you can. About 6 months later, Mr. R.H. King, personnel relations man with Alyeska, came to me and said, Lindsay, we've just voted to give you executive status because you're saving us thousands of dollars of counseling fees and helping the attitude on the pipeline. I said, well, Mr. King, what does executive status mean? He said, well, go any place you'd like, see anything you'd like to see, help us host dignitaries that come to the pipeline, and he said, we would like to invite you to sit in on our board meetings in an advisory capacity in order to help the relationship between management and labor. Dr. Stan, what I saw and heard for the next 3 years' time changed my life. If someone had said to me in 1970, Lindsay Williams, do you believe there's a group of people on the face of the earth who control the world? I would have laughed at them and said, who are you, a John Bircher? If someone had said to me in 1980, after I lived with these people, the most powerful, controlling, manipulative people on the face of this earth, I lived in the dorms with them there at the Prudhoe Bay oil field. I sat across the dinner table from them. I helped host the dignitaries that came to the pipeline. And if someone had said to me, Lindsay, do you believe there's a group of people on the face of the earth who control the world, tell the president what to do, dictate to the Arabs what they're going to give them for a barrel of oil, I would have said, not only do I believe it, I sat and listened to them talk about it. They had a 30-year plan, and I have seen them carry it out meticulously, exactly as they said they were going to do it. So if someone says to me, did you honestly believe they were going to go to $3, $4, and $5 a gallon at the gas pump? I would have said, sure. After all, it was in their plan. All they wanted was an excuse. They waited 20 years, and they've not built a single refinery in America. You think that's by chance? Not on your life. You think it's a part of their program that they finance the movement to not allow that refineries in America to be built? Sure, it's a part of their program. They finance the environmentalists. They tell the president what to do. They dictate to Congress. Everybody in Congress knows what happened to John F. Kennedy when he tried to tell the truth. Everybody in Congress knows what happened to Congressman George Hanson when he tried to tell the truth. They ruined them. I mean, they killed John F. Kennedy. They destroyed Congressman Hanson. And they're scared to death to tell the American people that gasoline within 6 months' time at the gas pump could be $1.50 a gallon. We could be the greatest nation on the face of this earth. There is as much crude oil on the North Slope of Alaska as there is in Saudi Arabia. And we can bring it out of the ground at $3 per barrel. And if the President and Congress in Washington would allow that crude oil to come to the American people and would allow some refineries to be built across this land, within 6 months' time we could have gasoline at $1.50 a gallon. We could be the greatest nation on the face of the earth again. There is no shortage whatsoever, and I saw every bit of it. I was there. I heard it. I saw the people. I named them in my book, The Energy Non-Crisis.
Now, I think, Lindsay, what about the natural gas? I think that is what's so amazing. I mean, the price of natural gas is skyrocketing up. In California, it's almost tripled. Across the country, it's going up. It'll be up 30-40% all across America for heating this winter. And you have mentioned that they're actually pumping a billion cubic feet of natural gas back into the ground up there, every single day.
When the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline Corridor was cut across the state of Alaska from the Arctic Ocean to Valdez in southern Alaska, where they take the oil out by tanker to the rest of the world and to America, that pipeline corridor was built to accommodate three pipelines, two crude oil, one natural gas. The oil companies had full intentions in building all three pipelines at the same time. After the first crude oil pipeline was built, the government of the United States of America said, you will not build any more. Stop. Right here. No more. Now, it would not have hurt the ecology in any manner whatsoever, and would not today, to build two more pipelines down the same corridor. One natural gas, and a crude oil. There is, because of that, there is no way to get the natural gas that comes up with the crude oil from the Arctic Ocean at Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, to the people every 24 hours. Now, this is startling. I mean, this is an atrocity. This is something that should cause, what I'm about to say, should cause an impeachment from the president down in Washington, D.C. Every 24 hours at Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, 1 billion. Now, you did hear me correctly. I did not say million. 1 billion cubic feet of natural gas every 24 hours comes up with the oil, and it is being pumped back into the ground at Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, and not allowed to come to the American people by order of the government of the United States of America. It is the cleanest method of generating electricity of any known. It would not hurt the ecology in any manner to put another pipeline down the same corridor. They are using, so I'll give you some details here. I mean, check me out if you'd like. Dr. Stan already has. Everybody in the audience, check me out. They are using 48 747-type jet aircraft engines that have been adapted for the purpose of pumping that natural gas back into the ground when we could be lowering our electric bills. We could be lowering the price of our heating this winter. We would have everything to cook with. 1 billion cubic feet of natural gas pumped back into the ground. Think what that would do for the economy of the United States of America. Dr. Stan? So we are in the midst of a crisis of catastrophic proportion because of what's taking place and the fact that they will not allow it to come to the American people.
Well, I think that it's an amazing, amazing story, and I really believe it's true because I checked one of the oil executives that you name in your book, and he confirms what you say. I think what's really so vitally important is for the American people to realize that this is a created crisis. It wasn't simply up on the north slope of Alaska. It was in Bakersfield. They had large oil fields which were capped, you know, under orders of the federal government. The same thing happened in Oklahoma. They've effectively blocked offshore drilling in the East Coast and the West Coast, and they blame it on the environmentalists. But who finances the environmentalists? Why, our government. Many of the great oil companies, the great tax-exempt foundations. It's all a great scam, but unfortunately, most people have no idea what's going on because they believe what they read in the newspaper. They go up on the Internet, they see the articles there about peak oil, and my goodness, the world is running out of oil. In fact, I can remember back in 1973 when they had the so-called oil crisis at that time, and the real reason they had an oil crisis was because under the Nixon administration, we told the Arabs to raise the price of oil and create the artificial shortage, and then they had television advertisements. They were little cartoons. And they showed dinosaurs lumbering through the forest, as a somber voice said, "We're running out of dinosaurs. We're running out of oil. There are no more dinosaurs. There's no more oil. There's only a limited amount. Oil is almost gone." Now, that was a great scam. Most people believe oil is a fossil fuel. How many times have you heard that? How many dinosaurs lumbering across the Arctic Circle do you think it would take to make all the 13 billions of oil that have come down through the pipeline from the Prudhoe Bay down to be offloaded into ships here in Alaska? How many dinosaurs do you think it would have taken? Or how many fish or how many organisms of some sort would there have to have been lumbering across the sands of Arabia to create oil, all the oil that's there? I think that we have a false presumption, but it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough, people will believe. And we'll talk perhaps a little later this evening about this idea that oil does not come from fossil fuels. It's exactly the opposite way around, but I suggest the work of Dr. Thomas Gold of Cornell University and his book, The Deep Hot Biosphere, as you begin to analyze, are we really being lied to? Are they creating an artificial shortage? Why would it be, as Lindsay asked, that we've had no refineries built in almost 30 years? Oh, it's the environmentalists' fault. Well, who funds the environmentalists? Your tax dollars, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, the great oil companies. Why would they actually fund something like that? Well, of course, if you have abundance, the price comes down. If you have shortages, the prices go up. And beyond that is another agenda. It's laid out in the Earth's Charter. And that's called redistribution of wealth within nations and, of course, between nations. They really intend to lower the living standards of the American people. What's happening is not, happening by accident. It's part of a long-range plan. And we'll be back here in just a moment with Lindsay Williams as we try to develop this whole idea of peak oil. We're running out of oil. My goodness, it's going to be $3 a gallon, $4 a gallon, very soon $5 or $6 a gallon for gasoline. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Lindsay Williams. And, Lindsay, I can almost imagine the time is going to come when we'll have $6 gasoline. It actually costs that much over in Europe today and many of the countries there. And, of course, most of it is simply tax. But they want to discourage driving automobiles. And there really are people who want to get the American people out of our cars. And all you need to do is read Al Gore's book, Earth in the Balance. Read the writings of the people who are affiliated with the environmental movement. Read the books written by Marie Strong. Understand there are people of great wealth and great power who want to lower the living standards of the American people and raise the living standards of people throughout the rest of the world. And I think that they're going to do a very, very good job of it because the American people are totally oblivious of what's happening. What are your thoughts, Lindsay?
You're exactly right, Dr. Stan. And what you said a moment ago, yes, it applies to the powers that be. They say something over and over and over and over. After a while, the majority of the American people begin to believe it. But, Dr. Stan, I'm going to turn the tables for just a moment. Because if Dr. Stan Monteith continues to say over and over and over and over what you're saying, likewise, there are going to be millions of people out there that are going to believe what you're saying. And they already are. And as a result, I'm seeing a grassroots movement of people who are beginning to believe the truth. And this type of a program that we're on today is becoming more and more popular, and this type of a radio network is becoming more and more popular because of this. So, Dr. Stan, you and I know you're going to, and I definitely intend to also, just keep telling the truth over and over and over until finally more and more people begin to believe it. And the powers that be are scared to death of the little man because there's a whole lot more of them than there are of those who are controlling the world. That's just a handful of people. But the people who are out here, if we can get enough of them to believe it. Now, I must at this point say a congratulation to the governor of the state of Alaska. I'm just amazed that he would say it. It was on the Bill Maher TV show. The show is entitled Lean Time. I believe it was on March the 18th of 2005, and he said, there is potentially enough crude oil on the north slope of Alaska to last the United States of America for 200 years. Now, he's exactly right. I saw that. In fact, I was there the day that the largest pool of oil in North America, probably the largest pool of oil on the face of the earth, was actually tested, proven. They had drilled into the field at Gull Island for about a year's period of time. It's a little island off of the north slope of Alaska, right on the water's edge in the Arctic Ocean. And I had seen that drill rig out there, but I never paid too much attention, except to the fact that there was another one out there, about 2 miles out in the Arctic Ocean. And one day I walked into ARCO base camp, and Mr. Jim Lawless said to me, Lindsay, you really want to see something exciting today? I said, I sure would. And he said, come on, hop in the pickup truck and let's go. We went out to the dock where the flotilla comes in every year to bring supplies to Prudhoe Bay, and he explained to me how that they had angle drilled and they'd gone in this new pool of oil. It was just off of the coast under the Arctic Ocean. And he said, Lindsay, we think we have struck the largest pool of oil that we've ever struck up here. And he told me all the details about that time a big black plume of smoke went up into the sky. And he looked for a few minutes, and all of a sudden he said, hop in the pickup truck, let's go back to base camp. We went back to ARCO base, walked up to Mr. Ken Fromm's office. Now, there were probably only 7 or 8 men in that office.
Hold that thought right there, Lindsay. We Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Lindsay is telling the story of what happened when this oil gusher came in on Gull Island, or just off of Gull Island, and they'd seen this great black plume go into the sky, and now, of course, they've gone back to the base camp, and there's seven or eight people there at the headquarters of the drilling company that has just struck this great oil field. And suddenly they're beginning to analyze the oil that's coming out and the pressures that are there, and they can give you a pretty good idea of how massive this field is. Elsewhere we've heard that, you know, it extends for at least 40 miles on either side of Gull Island, and every place they put in an oil well, why, they found oil. So it's a gigantic pool of oil up there, but it's been capped going back to 76. But anyway, you go to this meeting, there's six or seven or maybe eight people there, and they are just transfixed by the idea of discovering this massive oil field off the North Slope. Pick up the story there, Lindsay.
Dr. Stan, the only place on the face of the earth that this humongous oil pool, probably the largest in the world, definitely the largest in North America, definitely the largest in America. The only place on the face of the earth that you will find this documented, proven, and intricate details given is in my book, The Energy Non-Crisis. Now, this book is over 200 pages, in fact, 240 pages. It's a full-length book. This is not a pamphlet. A beautiful, full-color cover. And I'm hoping that tonight we can make available this book to every person in the audience, at least tell you how you can get it. We'll talk about that later. But I was there that day. We walked up to the office of Mr. Ken Fromm, probably seven, maybe eight people standing around the table, and Jim Lawler and I walked in. I was the only person there who was not an oil company official. I have never seen such excitement. These men were beside themselves. They were looking over the documents. They were looking over the size of the pool of oil, the pressure, the chemical analysis, everything that was taking place, and finally, Mr. Ken Fromm, who is the Mr. X in my book, The Energy Non-Crisis, he looked over at me and he said, Lindsay, Chaplain Williams, we have just done it. I said, Ken, you've just done what? He said, we have just discovered a pool of oil that is so huge that America is, as of today, energy independent. I said, what does that mean? He said, we don't need any more Arab oil. We can tell the rest of the oil-producing countries of the world that we are energy independent. We can get it for ourselves off of our own soil. He said, Lindsay, this is going to make America the greatest nation that you could possibly imagine. Well, you can imagine my excitement that night when I went back to my dorm room and didn't sleep much. But the next morning, I got up bright and early and was going back to Arco Base, and the first thing I wanted to see was the headlines on the Anchorage newspapers that came in on Wing Airlines' first flight. And I got back to Arco Base that morning. Something very strange happened. The security guard caught me just as quick as I got at the front door. And he said, Lindsay, go right straight up to Mr. Ken Fromm's office and sit down. Don't you say a word to anybody. I said, what's the matter? What have I done? He said, don't ask me any questions. Just go up there and sit down. In a few moments, Mr. Fromm came in, closed the door, went around the other side of the desk and said, without a smile on his face, Lindsay, I think I'd be careful about what you saw yesterday. He said, this information has just been classified. He said, no oil is going to be released from that pool anytime soon. Now, everyone in this listening audience, Dr. Stan has verified this. He called some authorities that I gave the name to him off, and he proved this to be true, what I'm saying right now. This is not just hocus-pocus or hearsay. And until this day, 25 years later, I'm sorry, until this day, not one drop of oil has been allowed to come to the American people from the Gull Island pool of oil. Why? Because they know, as well as we know our name, that if that pool of oil were allowed to come to the American people, within 6 months' time, the price of gasoline at the gas pump could be $1.50 a gallon. But that would be treacherous for our government officials and for Washington, D.C., because, you see, an agreement was signed back during the days of the Reagan administration when Mr. Henry Kissinger went abroad to the oil-producing countries and said, I'd like to cut you a deal. And we will make you rich. We'll buy oil from you if you will be willing to buy our T-bills and our national debt. Now, mark my words. Every time the national debt goes up, the price of oil is going up at the gas pump. Now, just mark it. You see, the standard currency of the world is oil, not the dollar, no, the euro. We are 8 $2 trillion in debt today, and someone must buy that debt. And if we produced oil from the North Slope of Alaska, the Arabs would not be obligated to buy our T-bills and our national debt, and Washington could not continue with their pork, and the national debt would, it would take the dollar into oblivion. It is a horror story that should cause every American to rise up in arms and say, we've had enough, we'll not put up with it anymore, and the only place on the face of this earth that you'll find this recorded is in my book, The Energy Non-Crisis.
Okay, say, hold on that, hold on there, please, Lindsay. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. We're certainly interviewing Lindsay Williams this evening, and we're talking about the fact that there is lots of oil up off the north slope of Alaska, a place called Gull Island. And I've read the book. I've talked to people who witnessed this. I believe this story to be true. Now, you have to ask yourself, why are they doing everything they can to block drilling up there in the Arctic wilderness? And you'll see articles in the paper telling us how beautiful it is up there. Oh, we've got to preserve this last wilderness. Ladies and gentlemen, it's under, ice and snow most of the time. And, for the short period of time, about how much out of the year, can you actually see the flowers and the earth up there?
Maybe for 30 days, Dr. Stan.
This is basically a scam. This whole thing is aimed at blocking the drilling up there. Certainly when President Bush wanted to get CAFTA through, that was the Central America Free Trade Zone, why, they used bribes up to $50 billion to buy the votes of congressmen to get them to vote for the CAFTA. When the vote came up for the Arctic wilderness, did the president really try to get that through? No, we didn't try to get it through. And they're only going to drill in a little tiny area up there. Why? Because they don't want to get a lot of oil. They don't want to get into those oil reserves. What their really goal is, number one, to keep the prices high and the profits, momentous. In fact, the oil companies are awash in money today. But even more than that, there is another agenda, and that is to change the living standards of the American people. When you understand this, so much of what's going on today begins to make sense. If you don't understand it, it doesn't make sense at all. But there really are people who have a different view of the world. They really want to lower our living standards. They intend to do it. They want to redistribute the wealth of the American people. And when you understand that, everything that's going on makes sense. If you don't understand that, you have to ask yourself, why won't they seal our borders? Why are they shipping our jobs overseas? Why are they shipping our factories overseas? Why are we taking massive amounts of money from America and giving it to countries throughout the world and writing off their debts? And you must understand that there are people who dream a different dream, who march to a different drumbeat, who worship a different God. And these people believe in a one-world government. They believe in a one-world religion and the destruction of Christianity. And as the story begins to unfold this evening, you're going to find out that there is plenty of oil. But who's the largest oil producer in the world today? It's not Saudi Arabia. And we'll tell you in just a moment who it is. Well, our guest this evening is Lindsay Williams, and I was asking the question, who is the largest oil producer in the world today? And it's not Saudi Arabia. It is the Soviet Union. Where is the Soviet Union getting all of their oil? Well, the Soviet Union does not accept what the people here in the West have been told, the lie they've been told, that we are dealing with fossil fuels when we're dealing with methane, when we're dealing with oil, when we're dealing with coal, and they have accepted the thesis that petroleum products are abiogenic. In other words, they came from primordial methane, which was here at the time the world was created, and is trapped down in the very center of the earth. And if you drill deep enough, you're going to get into massive amounts of oil, and that's exactly what they've done. They have drilled down over 40,000 feet, and they have over 300 wells that are down there, and they're producing so much oil. Oh, of course, our geologists say that couldn't be true. There's no oil down there. You only get oil out of shale, but the truth of the matter is the Russians are drilling down into these depths, and as a result, they have the largest oil production in the world today. And during this coming century that we live in, they will dwarf the rest of the world. And we could do exactly the same thing, but they're not going to tell you that oil is not biogenic, it's abiogenic. And for those of you who want to get more into this incredible story, I suggest the book, A Deep Hot Biosphere by a Nobel laureate, Professor Thomas Gold, who's passed away recently, but he was at Cornell University. And the Russians, and of course, have followed his thesis, or he's followed the Russian thesis, there's plenty of oil. But we can't tell the American people. They've got to believe the scam. Why America ran out of oil, peaked out of oil in 1971, peaked out of natural gas in 1971. The world is on the downward slope. All the readily available oil is gone. That's why we're going to have to ration it, and we ration it by raising the price. The last thing they want for the American people is to know the truth. So pick up the story from there, Lindsay.
Well, Dr. Sand, you're exactly right. I just saw that the other day in the documentation that you've just given. And I would urge every person in the listening audience tonight, and I'll let you do this, Dr. Stan, because I have a great respect for the radio stations that we're on, so I'm not going to say too much about it, and I will abide by what we've agreed on, but I want people to know I do have a videotape entitled The Energy Non-Crisis. I just made it a few weeks ago. It gives details I have never been willing to tell before. I have finally come to the realization that we are so much on the verge of a catastrophic event in America and the destruction of our way of life that I could not any longer hold my peace. And so I was willing to produce a videotape 1 hour long of the entire story of the energy non-crisis. I have 4 videotapes, and I'll let you tell the folks about them later, Dr. Stan, the way that you know is best in this situation. But you're right in everything that you say, in that we are being destroyed intentionally by a design plan. $700 million per day is leaving the United States of America today to pay for oil more than it did 2.5 years ago. We've got an $8 trillion debt. Listen to what Texas oil analyst Matt Simmons said. He warned oil prices could rocket to $100 within 6 months, plunging the world into an unprecedented fuel crisis. But none of this is needed. All of this is by design. And let me say to those who have ever doubted the fact that there are such people out there who control the world. Now, you hear Dr. Stan talk about this all the time. You see, I don't get it from hearsay. I lived with them. I was in the same dorms with them. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I'll never forget one night. I went back to my dorm room, I laid down on the bed, looked up at the ceiling, and I literally cried out to God, and I said, "Oh God, I can't believe there's such dastardly people left on the face of this earth as these." And as a result, I wrote about it in my book, The Syndrome of Control, which is my second book. And then I said, I can't stop there. I wrote about it in my book, To Seduce a Nation. And then I produced my latest book, You Can Live. All 4 of these books in order to try to help the American people. Folks, believe me, this is not an idea that's in someone's imagination. It is not just something Dr. Stan thought up. These people are for real. And I can tell you they are because I was there. I lived with them. And it had to have been by the providence of God, because there is no possible way that a little unknown missionary could all of a sudden be rubbing shoulders with the most powerful people on the face of the earth who literally control nations. They do exist. It is for real. Everything Dr. Stan is saying on these programs is true. And folks, believe every word you hear him say, whether I'm on the broadcast. If he says it, you can be assured of one thing. He's researched it. He knows what he's talking about. I cannot think of anyone in America today who is doing such a meticulous job of telling the facts and the truth as Dr. Stan Monteith. And by the way, I must say this. I just can't help it. Dr. Stan, you bear with me for a moment. If you want the most marvelous newsletter that I've ever read in my life, you must get it. In fact, almost every month I'll call Dr. Stan and say, Dr. Stan, I can't believe this month you produced a newsletter that were better than last month. This is a masterpiece. And folks, it should be in the home of every American because he's telling things that nobody else is daring to step out and tell except Dr. Stan Monteith.
Well, you know,
he's telling the truth.
You know who rushes in when where the angels fool a fear to tread. But, you know, the people have no really understanding of how important oil is to our society. Of course, we power our cars and we drive our locomotives and certainly our trucks are diesel-powered, our airlines are kerosene or jet fuel-powered. But people don't understand that we have oil in our asphalt that paves our roads. We have oil in our fertilizers, in our drugs, in our paints, our plastics, and certainly our detergent soaps. Almost everything is petroleum-based. As the price of oil goes up, why these things are going to become increasingly dear. People do not realize we are totally energy-dependent. I mean, how do we fuel our industry if we don't have cheap electricity? In fact, already many of our major factories are moving to other countries. Aluminum is moving offshore. Why? Because they're energy dependent upon electricity. And, of course, you get electricity from hydroelectric power. But they're tearing down our dams. Oh, we've got to do away with the dams. Why? They're blocking the migration of the fish. And so they've actually torn down dams all across America, a long-range plan to destroy the energy self-sufficiency of our country. They have artificially run the price of natural gas up by generating electricity with natural gas and creating artificial shortages. Why can't we use nuclear power? Oh, my goodness, we don't know what to do with the spent fuel. The truth of the matter is, you reprocess it, you don't have a problem. That's what the rest of the world does. That's what China does. That's what France does. That's what Japan does. But here in the United States, where they always talk about, oh, we can't have nuclear power, where are we going to store the spent fuel? How many articles have you read? How many television programs have you seen about the caves there in Nevada, they're trying to find a place they can have the spent fuel, but the new regulations have come up and they've got to tell us what's going to happen 100,000 years from now. Why don't they simply reprocess the spent fuel? Because they want the problem, they do not want the solution. When you understand that they have effectively blocked the development of nuclear power for 40 years in America to create the artificial shortages we have today, it all begins to make sense. Who is it who's blocked the development of nuclear power? Why, of course, the environmental movement. And who funds the environmental movement? The richest people in America today, working in concert with the people who control our media and the oil companies and the Great Tax Exempt Foundation and government bureaucrats. So this is how the whole thing works. But you see, the average American doesn't understand that. You create the problem, and then you come up with your solution. Why, my goodness, we can't use coal to create electricity because, of course, that's going to pollute the air. And so we can't have dams producing it because that's going to disturb the fishies. We can't use natural gas. Well, we can do that, but then, of course, we're going to have to drive the price through the roof. We can't use oil. And, well, solar and wind, that's the way. Do you have any idea how expensive solar and wind power is? It's totally impractical. And why aren't they doing that over in China or in Russia? Well, because they know it's impractical, but they sell that to the American people. The real thing is that they want to make the cost of electricity so high that we'll have to turn off our air conditioners in the summer and turn off our heating in the winter. They know exactly what they're doing. They want to lower our living standards. When you understand that, everything makes sense. If you honestly think these things are happening by accident, why, you're incredibly naive. And because they control the mass media, and for those of you who do not know, why, the mass media in America today is dominated by five mega corporations: Bertelsmann, Disney, Fox, Viacom, and Time Warner. This is beautifully covered in a book written by Professor Ben Bogdakian of the University of California in Berkeley. He's emeritus now, but he started studying this back in 1983 when 50 mega corporations dominated the media. And now there are five. The media, the new media monopoly is the name of his book. And you need to get the information. You need to understand what is really going on. Well, you know, I think it's so vitally important that people understand that there are lots of energy sources. You can make oil out of garbage. You can make oil out of the oil shale. You can make oil out of the oil sands. In fact, up in, in Alberta today, why the Chinese have gone up there and they've made arrangements to begin developing the oil in the oil sand deposits. I mean, there is more oil in the oil sands, tremendous amounts. In fact, our own government will admit that we have sufficient oil in the United States for at least 75 years, and that doesn't go into so many of the untapped reserves or the areas we're not allowed to drill. But they do not want the American people to know that. They want them to believe that there is really a crisis, and that is going to justify raising the prices. And you're going to see this, I fear, in the next few months as prices go higher and higher. And they're already talking about the pricing of heating oil going up 30 to 40% this winter, and the same for natural gas. I believe we are entering a period of crisis, and really there may very well be chaos in many of our cities, especially as more and more of our citizens seem to be displaced from their homes in New Orleans and down along the Gulf. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment, why, we will take calls. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Lindsay, you know, I know that you are on programs all across America telling your story. What sort of response are you getting from your listeners?
More response by the month, Dr. Stan. My book that was published 25 years ago, if I didn't know better, I would vow and declare that it was just in its first edition now. People are becoming interested again. And Dr. Stan, I don't know exactly what I can say, but you know more how you can say it than I could possibly, but I would like people to know about my four books, The Energy Non-Crisis, my second book, To Syndrome of Control, my third book, To Hallucination, and You Can Live. I do give those away, by the way.
Well, why don't you just give your telephone number right now? I think that would be the best thing to do.
Yes.
What's your telephone number?
If you just dial 800-321-2900. At least I would like you to have a method of knowing the availability of some of these things. And I won't say any more except just to ask you to please dial this number. They'll be glad to give you information about all the materials, full videotapes, my books, other things. Please dial the number 800-321-2900. The operators are standing by. And they'd be more than happy to give you all the details and what is available and what you could do.
All right, fine. Well, I think it's important that people understand that we are entering a very difficult time. How much Hurricane Rita impact will have. I think it will be a considerable attack. We do know that Katrina had no sooner struck the Gulf Coast than oil prices here in California, and we don't get any of our oil from the Gulf Coast, but prices here and all across America, having nothing to do with Katrina, immediately went up. In other words, there was no shortage suddenly. Within 24 hours of this, it was all staged, and this is how they do it. And of course, they create this feeling. You know, my goodness, you know, we've got the problem down in the Gulf. That's why the price of oil is going to go up here in California. We don't get our oil from that part of the country. So it's about time people begin to understand how readily we can be manipulated. Let's go to John, who's calling from San Gabriel, California, and we'll just pass him through. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Oh, fine. Thank you.
I have a question for our guest.
Yes. I was thinking that something that seemed to be important would be to try to find a good investigative reporter that could expand upon the case that Lindsay has in the book and try to enhance the credibility. I don't know if WorldNet Daily or somebody might have people that could really do some of the investigation that you did to verify his statements, but it needs some kind of major publicity effort, and probably need someone who would independently verify all the facts that Lindsay has.
Well, John, you're exactly right. In fact, the foreword to my book, The Energy Non-Crisis, is written by Senator Hugh Chance. I became so alarmed over what I was seeing when I was on the North Slope of Alaska that I knew someone besides myself with great credibility must see it. I invited a state senator from the state of Colorado, Senator Hugh Chance, to the pipeline and spend a week with me. He did. As a result, he said to me the day before he was going to come back to the lower 48 states, he said, Lindsay, I was sitting in the Senate of the state of Colorado when the men came from Washington, D.C. to brief us as state senators as to the energy crisis, the lines at the gas pump and the price. He said, Lindsay, from what I have seen here, the documentation I've been shown by these oil company officials and what you have enabled me to see this week, I've come to realize that everything I was told almost in that top-level briefing sitting in the Senate of the state of Colorado was the exact opposite of what the truth is. He said I was intentionally misbriefed and lied to, and that's the foreword to my book, The Energy Non-Crisis.
Now, what year was that? Did he write that? Do you recall?
That was 1980.
Now, but I mean, when was he up there in Alaska?
Oh, he was up there in 1976.
All right. John, I think that we have a couple of new half-hour programs we're doing on our weekend program that will give you a lot more information. And certainly, if you have not yet read Lindsay's book, and
I have
his telephone number.
I haven't looked at the book, but what I'm thinking of is that in addition to the pioneering and seminal effort that Lindsay has made and what he's produced in the book, that now since 30 years after the original facts, that there be someone who could attract enough attention as an investigative reporter to give it a boost
into the present environment. Maybe you can just keep talking it up. Maybe we can find somebody who will do it. But thanks very much for calling, John. Let's go to Edson, who's calling from Los Angeles. Hi, Edson. Do you have a question?
Yes, I'm worried about Nikola Tesla and the Tesla technology about transmitting power with wires and making power.
That's a little different subject, but certainly Tesla was a genius. He came up with some amazing things about how you could actually transmit electricity without wires. In fact, he wanted free electricity. That didn't go over very well with J.P. Morgan, who was hiring him, and so they parted ways. But anyway, so thanks so much for calling. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we've got Paul calling from Ohio. Paul, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, Dr. Stan. It's so good to talk to you again. I don't know how much longer we'll be able to talk to you the way things are going. The globalists are moving so fast. How much is your newsletter?
I really can't give you the price, but if you can call 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-544-8927. They'll tell you all about the newsletter, okay?
Thank you very much.
God bless you. Anything else you want to ask? I will tell you that the October newsletter deals with this subject, and I think the November newsletter will deal with it again. I think it's such an important subject, and I want you to have the facts and know where you can go to document the truth about what's going on, because there is so much disinformation and misinformation in the regular media and certainly up there on the Internet.
I know that to be a fact, Dr. Stan. Thank you very much.
God bless you. Bye-bye. Well, Lindsay, we're just about out of time. We've got about a minute and a half to wrap up the program. What's the message you would like to leave with our listeners this evening?
This next year is coming around to politicians beginning to think about getting elected again. This is probably the last opportunity we'll have to be able to try to do something about it. Know the facts. That's the first thing that a person must do. You must be able to document what you're saying, what you tell your politician. Please get my book, The Energy Non-Crisis, and my other three books and my four videotapes so that you can document the facts, know what you're saying, be able to say, this is it, and I can prove it. They do exist. These people do. And there is time to do something about it. Dr. Stan is doing everything in his power. I likewise will do the same. Folks, don't lose heart. There's more of us than there are of them. There is time to do something about it, and now is the time to take a stand, knowing the truth, and then doing everything within your power. First of all, prepare for your own home. Folks, you cannot afford to continue driving 2, 3, and 4 hours back and forth to work every day. You've got to do something about a home-based business and get into something whereby they aren't going to give you an increase in salary just because the price of gasoline goes up. Gasoline is going to $4, $5, and $6 a gallon. Mark my words. You can say this program is prophetic if you'd like. You probably will 6 months from now. I'm not a prophet. I just happen to be sitting there with the people who planned it. They have an agenda. It is for real.
All right. God bless you. Thanks very much for being with us, Lindsay.
Thank you, Dr.
Good night. We'll be talking to you later. And our guest this evening has been Lindsay Williams. And, of course, we've been talking about his book, The Energy Non-Crisis. That's The Energy Non-Crisis and this incredible scam that will influence every one of us. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind our listening audience that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to reach people all across America with the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And at about 60 stations every week, and now, of course, we're being heard on the Here's Help radio network every afternoon. This program will be rebroadcast there. And, of course, it is a rather great undertaking. And if you'd like to join this epic struggle with us, give us a call. 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a free copy of our current newsletter, basically the story of wars. Why do we go to war? Well, we've reproduced in our September newsletter, I should say our August newsletter, which is going out in early in September, a speech was given by Major General Smedley Butler in 1935. It's called War is a Racket. And it's a rather long newsletter, much longer than usual, but we'll be glad to send you one free of charge if you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or you can go up on our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com, and you can listen to our programs there 5 hours a day, and then you can listen to the archives, and you won't get anything at all accomplished, but you'll sure learn a lot, and hopefully as you listen to the programs and you check the facts that are put out there, why, of course, you'll come to the realization that there really is a problem. And if you need documentation on anything that's said on our programs, please you feel free to give us a call. We'll try to provide that for you. And then, of course, we hope that you'll tell other people about our programs and encourage them to begin listening and beginning to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle. Because behind everything going on, there are powerful spiritual forces. There is a spiritual dimension, and there are people who are in contact with other dimension. Some of them are called spiritualists. Some of them are called mediums. Some of them are called witches. Some of them are called Luciferians. Some of them are called Satanists. And some of them are politicians working at the highest level of our government today. And if you want more information on that, of course, my May and June 2005 newsletters on the occult hierarchy that rules the world, we recommend them to you. They're available on my website at www.radioliberty.com. That's the occult hierarchy, part one. Part two. Then we want to, of course, mention we will be having our annual Radio Liberty Convention here in the Monterey Bay area, and it will be on the 19th of November all day long. We're going to have a great lineup of speakers, and we hope that you'll be able to come, and we will be, of course, serving lunch, so you're going to have to call ahead of time and let us know you'll be here. Again, the number to call, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection, because we're on the front lines of this battle. And so until tomorrow evening at the same time, we'll be with you once again. Dr. Stan, goodbye. May the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion. It's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station we're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Please hold your calls for the time being. We're hoping, against hope, we're going to have Orlean Kula on the line. Orlean is in St. Louis today attending a meeting of the Eagle Forum, but he's going to be talking about what happened when she went to the NEA meeting. Now, that's the National Educational Organization, and of course it's sort of like a union for teachers. And the NEA is certainly one of the most dangerous organizations in America today because it's headed by people who have a different worldview. And they're using our educational system, they're using this educational union to indoctrinate our children in humanism and in hatred of God and family and country. And when you understand that, well, you can begin to understand what's happening. They're dumbing down our children intentionally. Our children, if you look at the SAT scores when they graduate, our children cannot compete with children from the other countries. Our children are poor in mathematics. They're worse in so many other things that they need to be in. And well over half of our children, when they graduate from high schools in America, have to go into special classes so they can get into college. And even then, they really are getting a mediocre education. Our children cannot compete with children who are graduating from the schools in China and in India, because there they stress excellence, and here we stress mediocrity. And when you understand that, well, you can begin to understand what's going on. Here we want groups, and we want the children not competing with one another in so many of our schools. They're all to be together. It's groupthink, group education. No, you're not going to be a part of a group when you're out in the real world. You're going to be an individual. Here we're discouraging individualism, and yet individualism was what made America great. Here, of course, we're emphasizing mediocrity. We wouldn't want to hurt anybody's feelings by failing them. We want everybody to be equal. We want to keep promoting children, even though they haven't learned enough to go to the next grade, because we wouldn't want to hurt their psyche. We're going to teach them all about sex education and suicide education and death education, but they're not going to know very much about Shakespeare. They're not going to know very much about Socrates, and they're certainly not going to know much about Milton. And this is what's going on today. Well, Orlean was asked to attend this meeting of the NEA, the National Educational Organization, and she's going to tell us what she found. Hi, Orlean. How are you doing tonight?
It's fine, thank you. Dr. Stan, thank you for having me on. And everything you just said is absolutely true.
Well, you pick up the story from there.
Well, I was asked to attend this NEA conference by Phyllis Schlafly. She always tries to get someone in there so they can take notes and send material to her, because she always writes a big article about the NEA for her education reporter.
And you are a teacher, of course. You are a certified accredited teacher, aren't you?
Yes, I am. But I never have joined the NEA, and I've never joined the CTA, because I knew that that's the California Teachers Association. I knew that most of their dues goes towards political causes, and they're certainly not supporting the Republican Party. They're supporting the Democrats and all sorts of liberal agendas. So I have never joined them, so it was very hard to get in. We were able to finally find this wonderful Conservative Educators Caucus who allowed me to come as the guest of one of their members. You can come in if you have someone inviting you as a guest. So that was the first interesting, intriguing thing, was to get in there. It took probably about 3 weeks of efforts. And then I...
Hold that thought right there. Okay, Orlean, why don't you go from there?
Well, I actually wrote an article about this experience where I compared it to being on another planet because it was so unusual to be surrounded by 9,000 liberals and such unusual things happening. One of the men who was there, a member of this Conservative Educators Caucus, Randy Jackson from the state of Washington, as I sat there in these meetings watching the strange proposals being presented that had nothing to do with education, he told me, you know, some people think that NEA stands for the National Everything Association. They really believe that their resolutions and proposals should deal with every liberal agenda under the sun, so few have anything to do with education. And that's essentially what it was. And some of the things that they proposed were outlandish, such things as boycotting the not only Gallo Winery but also Walmart, because these two organizations do not believe in having their members join a union. So they were asked to join the AFL-CIO in boycotting them. And that was just one interesting of one of their many resolutions. Another one was passed that they should infiltrate the Republican Party to make the Republican Party more receptive to NEA beliefs.
Well, of course, if I see what the Republican Party is doing today, the Republicans passed Ted Kennedy's A No Child Left Behind bill. Why would they have done that? That's the worst piece of legislation that ever came down there. Ted Kennedy couldn't get it through. Republicans who didn't. I know you're a loyal Republican, but you really can't defend that, can you?
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
Ted Kennedy, actually supposedly Bush part of it, but it's been a disaster for education, and even the NEA recognizes that No Child Left Behind is bad, but they just want to have more funding for it, then they'll be more supportive of it. That was one of the things that they kept stressing, that we needed more funding for No Child Left Behind. But you could see some of the strange ideas that they had just from the badges that were being worn, and that's what Phyllis Schlafly asked me to do, was to gather up all these badges and send them to her, and she always puts them in her Education Reporter article. Just amazing.
Well, what were on the badges that they were wearing?
Amazing, of course, bashing Bush badges, but they also had ones.
Hold that thought there for just a moment as you bring our station sunboard. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Orlene Kula, and she went to the National Educational Association meeting, the NEA meeting, and she is a teacher herself, although not a member of the NEA, but she was able to get in, and she's commenting that everybody's wearing badges, and they're bashing Bush, but this is what you'd expect that they would do, but pick up the story from there.
They also had badges that support gays and lesbians, including rainbow wedding bells, badges that are asking to keep Title IX. Are you familiar with what that is?
Well, why don't you explain to Title IX is?
That's the radical feminist policy that now is running our college sports programs, insisting that there be an equal number of both men's and women's teams and participants, which is causing many schools to lose their wrestling teams and other men's teams, because there's no way that we're going to get equal number of women and men in athletics, because women are just not interested in doing that. But that's so we're keeping Title IX, and then some of the badges were asking for protecting Social Security from privatization. They were criticizing No Child Left Behind, but asking for more funding of it.
Yeah, why were they critical of it? It was Ted Kennedy's bill.
They just want more money.
They want more money. Okay.
And then there were a few conservative badges. There was one I saw, I'm proud to be a Republican, but no one was wearing it. It was just at a booth where it could be sold. And then there was a few conservative booths. I actually saw a man who was selling tiny precious feet pins, the, you know, pro-life symbol. But no one was buying his pins either. I went up and shook his hand and thanked him for having the courage to be there.
They'd probably be afraid to wear them there.
Yes, I think so. So it was obviously anything that was liberal was welcome, and that was one of the things I wrote about in my article, too, that and the opening remarks given by the president, Reg Weaver, he tells us that the NEA is the largest deliberating democratic body in the world. Every voice is welcome and every voice will be heard. And yet the conservative Christian voice was obviously not welcome, nor were they allowed to be heard. They came up with four different resolutions, and they were scheduled to be heard the last day. They'd been working on them all week long. I'd been helping them with them. I even wrote a speech for one of the delegates to give. And when their resolutions were to come up to be presented, suddenly Reg Weaver said, I have a stack of papers here on my desk asking for the next resolutions to be sent to committee. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. And all of these resolutions were just off the committee.
They couldn't even be presented. This is not the way you run a democratic organization, but then no one would suggest this is really democratic. It's very authoritarian. They have an agenda, and that, of course, is the raping of the minds of our children. Always in the name, of course, of helping our children, look at the end result of what the educational system in America has done to our children today.
That's really the truth. And, of course, there's always a very pro-gay agenda. And that was resolution item 82, and it was passed without any problems. It was asking for the support of the NEA in preventing any new attacks on the curricula policies and practices that support gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender students, families, and staff members. And one person spoke out against this. This was the president of the Conservative Educators Caucus. And she said that what she was very opposed to about this was that no other viewpoint is ever allowed to be heard, and nor can the viewpoint be heard that there are gays who have left that lifestyle and are now living a happy, healthy, normal lifestyle. But when she mentioned that, there was booing throughout the delegation, and Reg Weaver had to come back on the microphone and say, we don't allow any booing. And then this man who presented it said, according to the American Psychiatric Association, there is no such thing as an ex-gay. And he was cheered and applauded.
No,
so their resolution passed, of course.
Well, the tragedy is, if you really care about the gay and lesbian people, you're going to tell them that this lifestyle is going to kill them. That
right.
One in three lesbians will develop breast carcinoma, that the average male homosexual that will die 20 years younger than he would have if he had a normal lifestyle. It is not a normal lifestyle. You can proclaim all you want to, but when you begin violating God's laws, there are consequences. And if you care about gays and homosexuals and lesbians, you're going to tell them what they're doing is, you can care for them as individuals. They're often very nice people. Somebody's got to tell them they're going to die as a result of what they're doing. There are consequences for everything we do, but I bet they wouldn't allow that to be said at the NEA meeting.
Not at all, and nor is it allowed in any of our schools anymore. It used to be that they would at least have a presentation coming in about AIDS and how terrible it is. It's like you don't even hear that anymore. It's like you don't even associate homosexuality with the AIDS lifestyle. When I helped Tim Buehler, who started a conservative club at Rancho Cotati High School, which is in Roner Park right next to Santa Rosa, I helped him with a protest that he had against the Day of Silence last April, and he was trying to promote the Day of Truth, where they could actually hear about the dangers of the homosexual lifestyle. And we were there holding banners, and we were standing on a sidewalk across from his school. After the rally was over with and the kids were going back into their classrooms, a group of obvious lesbians came up and cornered me. I was still gathering up some of the posters, and everyone else had left, and I thought, these are really dangerous looking characters. Anyway, they asked me, why are you here and why do you hate gays and lesbians? And I told them, I don't hate anyone. I'm just here so you can hear a different voice and to hear the dangers of the lifestyle that you're now in. And I tried to tell them about that your life expectancy is going to be so much less. And I said, and just the emotional trauma, if if you could only understand what all this is doing to you. And I also told them that my niece used to be part of the lesbian lifestyle. She tried to commit suicide. She was miserable. She had a very silly psychiatrist who was telling her that this was normal and that she just had to learn to accept it. Finally, her parents were able to get her in with a psychiatrist who really told her the truth and traced it back to something in her childhood where this was coming from. And then she was able to leave that lifestyle. She's now happily married and has three children. And I told these girls, I said, that you're in your schools, you're not allowed to even hear that anyone is able to leave the lifestyle. You're not able to hear any other viewpoint. Anyway, they were very receptive to what I was telling them, and they actually thanked me.
Well, you know, the thing is, it's how you present this message, and so much of what's being put out really is being put out in a hateful manner. But if you care about these people, you're going to tell them the truth. And when we understand that this lifestyle of the gay and lesbian lifestyle is actually being pushed by Planned Parenthood as part of their population control agenda. And anybody who doubts that will be glad to send you the pages from the October 1973, as I remember, Family Planning Association meeting, where they list all the means to control the population, and one of them was to encourage homosexuality. They understand. They just don't want the gays and lesbians to understand that they are expendable. And, of course, they're dying as a result of these programs.
And this was actually the issue that kind of woke you up to what was going on, wasn't it, when you were trying to fight AIDS in California and get it to be considered a communicable disease, and you discovered that that was just not possible, that this was a political issue, and
there was
stop it.
A planned program to allow the epidemic to run its course and kill hundreds of millions of people. And when you realize that, of course, we've already lost 500,000 people in this country, we have another 1 million people infected, and they're going to die sooner or later, you know, of this disease, the vast majority of them. That is a failed public health policy, or a very, very successful genocidal policy. And the same is true in Africa, because this is a race-specific disease. We equate here homosexuality and AIDS together, but in Africa it's primarily the disease of blacks. It's a disease of heterosexuals. You see very little in the white population, but in the black population, 42% of the pregnant women in Botswana, 42% of the pregnant women in Swaziland are HIV infected. And they're all going to die. Either the greatest public health failure of all time or the most successful genocidal program. And I rather think that it's exactly what they intended to happen, exactly as they intended here in America. Over half of the people have died are homosexuals, and yet we're encouraging more and more people to go into the homosexual lifestyle. Why would you do something like that unintentionally? Well, anyway, what else did you learn there at this NEA meeting?
Well, one of the other proposals that the Conservative Education Caucus presented was about academic freedom. And we thought, well, surely this will fly. You know, teachers, doesn't matter if they're Republicans or Democrats, they should believe in academic freedom. This was presented by Randy Jackson from the state of Washington, and they at least allowed him to come into the Higher Educators Caucus to speak to them. And so some of us went along with him to hear what he had to say. Before he was even allowed to speak, they had so prejudiced the group against him and against his academic freedom initiative. They said that this was part of David Horowitz's plan and that it would actually be taking away academic freedom from the teachers. They would not be allowed to teach what they wanted to teach. And then he was finally able to speak, but they had so prejudiced everyone that they voted against it.
And, of course, they stacked these committees. This whole thing is really planned ahead of time. They go through this appearance of being democratic. I mean, I witnessed this in the California Medical Association. They don't have representatives of the teachers there. They have a hierarchy that rules everything, that puts together the committees, that they will vote the way they want the conclusion to come out. And that's why we're losing our country. Well, certainly it doesn't sound like there are very many conservatives there, and those who were there didn't do very well. Would that be a fair statement, Arlene?
That's probably true, but there was one amazing man, and this was a reporter from the Washington Times. His name was George Archibald, and he every day would have the most amazing articles coming out about this that would appear in the next morning's issue of the Washington Times. And he was always writing about this brave group of conservative educators caucus, and he wrote about Randy Jackson's academic freedom amendment, and that came out in the Washington Times. So obviously they knew that it existed. Therefore, Randy was able to speak before the whole 9,000 delegation and present his academic freedom. And so we say, yay, at least one resolution has been presented. But then we had a whole bunch of people who were going to be speaking in favor of this. And before they could, a lady stood up and said, I move that this amendment be referred to committee. So immediately it passed, and that was the end. There was no more debate.
And, of course, these are the techniques. They either table it, they send it to committee, knowing that this is the way they will kill it, because they don't want this to be discussed. They don't want even some of the people there who might even be liberal, but they don't want them to hear the truth. And this is how they control these meetings, or they'll give you 3 minutes to talk. Do they have a three-minute rule there? How long can you talk?
It seemed like it was at least 3 minutes.
Because this is ordinary what they do. They give you such a short time, you really can't organize what you want to say, and then they will have all the people there on the other side that will come on afterwards and rebut what you've said. And most people are afraid to get up and speak. And, of course, what they do is they tend to demonize and marginalize and attack people who tell the truth until eventually people sort of give up and just don't accomplish anything.
That's really the truth. There was also another amazing thing that happened. There is a Republican Educators Caucus, but it was taken over by a coup. It was amazing. This woman by the name of Shauna Adams started attending their meetings last year, and when the election was to take place, she somehow got herself nominated to be the next president. And when the election was to take place, she showed up with 30 new people that no one had ever seen before. They signed up to become members of the Republican caucus, paid their dues, and then they voted for Shauna. And so she was voted in. And then these people never came back again.
These are standard techniques, so they're used over and over again to take over groups. And, of course, this is the thing, because people want to be part of a group and they want to participate in the group and work through the group. And all of our conservative organizations, not just the Conservative Educators, I see this in almost every key conservative or anti-communist or Christian group in America today. They have all been infiltrated. They've all been neutralized. And none of them are being effective. And that's why we're losing our battle. The other side is totally dedicated. They will lie, they will cheat, they will do whatever they can, to play by the rules and then distort the rules. And, of course, they take over our organizations, so we have no place to go. This is why I do what I do, 5 hours a day, trying to make people understand we're losing America, not by accident, but by intent.
That's really true.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Arlene Kuhler, and Arlene attended the meeting of the National Education Association here recently to see what was going on, and has been giving us just a heart-rending description of what's taking place. So were there any of the other things that you noticed that really struck you as far as the prejudice of this organization and their dedication to preventing free and open discussion?
It was very interesting that from the very beginning, they actually had an opening prayer. And I thought, wow, I didn't think they believed in prayer. They won't allow us to have it in our schools. But then I listened to this prayer, and it was the most amazing, strange, New Age-sounding prayer. It was given by David Sanchez, the vice president of the CTA, California Teachers Association. And in his prayer, he invoked the blessings over the conference of just about every god in the universe. He mentioned Buddha, Allah, the Great Spirit, Gaia, and he even included the God of the Christians and the Jews. However, then, on the 4th of July, they always have this conference over the 4th of July weekend, and on the 4th of July, they sang a song, a patriotic song, in honor of our country, I'm Proud to Be an American. But the last stanza, they changed. It ends with, God bless the USA. Over the screen where you could see the words were now, we love the USA. So they took God out of the song, and God was never mentioned in anything the rest of the week. So that's obviously a big part of the NEA. They're very down on Christianity and anyone who is of a conservative viewpoint in anything that's different from their politically correct and liberal ideas. And that really disturbed a lot of Christians in this conservative educators caucus. They were just shocked that they dared to take God out of that song.
Well, of course, the thing is that I suspect that most of the people there, though, are really very, very liberal. So many teachers are liberal. They've been trained in government schools and government universities and government teachers college. And then they go out, they work for government, and they somehow believe that government is the solution to our problem. Nobody has ever told them that government isn't the solution to our problem. Government is the very basis of our problem. And, of course, the founding fathers of America feared government. They thought that the government governs best, the government's the least. And they would echo Thomas Jefferson's warning that in matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but rather bind them down for mischief with the change of the Constitution. Well, I don't think that our teachers really understand that you can't trust government. You never can trust government. They don't like George Bush, but they would have loved Bill Clinton. Of course, most Republicans, love George Bush, but they hate Bill Clinton. And I say that there's really not a dime's worth of difference between them. Both of them are in favor of big government. Both of them are dedicated to globalism. Both of them are dedicated to failing to address the immigration problem. Both of them are dedicated to increased government spending and government solving our problems. And that is the antithesis of what America really stands for. In fact, one of the most frightening things I see is suddenly here you and I are going to be taxed to pay for rebuilding the homes in New Orleans and all along the Gulf Coast, and now heaven only knows how much more damage. We're going to have to put up $200 billion for Katrina, another $200 for Rita. I mean, where is the money going to come from? Well, they can't tax the people anymore. They're simply going to create the money out of nothing or borrow it from future generations. And this is how great societies have always been destroyed in the past. They weren't destroyed usually by foreign enemies. They were destroyed from within by monetary irresponsibility until things became so corrupt that it said that as the Huns were streaming into the city of Rome, the women were leaning out the windows shouting gleefully, "When do the rapes begin?" I mean, a totally moral, depraved society. A direct result, of course, of fiscal irresponsibility. Well, our guest this evening is Orlene Kula. We're talking about her visit to her attending the meeting of the National Education Association. And if you have any questions when we get back, we'll invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Radio. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we need to remind our listeners that our guest this evening is Orlene Kula, and of course she's with the Eagle Forum here in California. Are you the president of the Eagle Forum, Orlene?
Yes, for the state, and I'm also the president for Sonoma County Eagle Forum.
All right, and of course Orlene is really on the front lines of this battle to try to let people understand what's really happening in education, and because she is a substitute teacher, she has a chance to go into schools many times, and you know, as you talk to her young people, aren't they awfully confused as far as values and morality and, you know, really where they're going with their lives and what life is really all about?
They really are. That's why I, a year ago, published a book called The Golden Rule School, where I was trying to bring back even the Golden Rule to our California schools and teach them some semblance of morality. I based my book on a experience I had when I had a long-term position teaching English and world history. I started writing statements, quotations on the board every morning for the kids to put into their journal, and instead of writing about something prying into their personal lives like so many teachers do, I would just have them put this wonderful quotation, which was teaching some moral truth, in their journal, and then they were to write the little paragraph talking about it, what it meant to them, and then I would have them read to me what were some of the things they had written. It was a wonderful way for 10 minutes every morning to just talk about some moral truth. For example, one of them was, "What a tangled web I weave when at first I practice to deceive." There was not one of all these five classes of seventh graders who knew what the word deceive meant. That shows how dumbed down our vocabulary has become. But when I explained it meant, you tell a little white lie, and when you tell a lie, then you have to support it with other lies, and pretty soon you have this tangled web, and you can see all their little heads nodding that all been through that. Anyway, through the course of the 6 weeks that I was teaching, these kids every morning had a wonderful new quotation, and they began to like it so much, they began to bring in quotes for me that their parents had given them. And when they found out that I was not going to be their permanent teacher, I was just there temporarily and a new teacher was going to be coming, one of the girls started a petition drive, had all of the five classes sign it. I didn't know she was doing this. And they presented it to the principal, and it said, "Please let Mrs. Kula be our teacher. She is teaching us these great moral truths that we would just not know otherwise." So you can see they're just starved for it.
We'll be back in just a moment with Orlene Kula. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. I guess this evening is Orlene Kula. And, of course, we're talking about her experience there at the NEA. And then, of course, she's talking about her book, The Golden Rule School, and its book of quotations. And I was just had it here. I've kept it beside me. And I noticed some of these. Fortune favors the brave. Fortune favors the brave. Nothing great was ever achieved without enthusiasm. We could never learn to be brave and patient if there were only joy in the world. We would never learn to be brave and patient if there were only joy in the world. And then, of course, failure. Do you remember when Queen Victoria once said, "Failure, the possibilities do not exist. And the only thing we have to fear is fear itself." Oh, these wonderful, wonderful quotations from long lost leaders of the world. Where did you really compile most of these on your own? How did you put them together?
I had four different quotation books. and they were just what also the inspiration for this came from. I have a beautiful poster that was hanging in my home all my years that my father had. He had received it as a gift from the Lions Club for a service project that he led, and it was hanging in our bathroom. He thought there would be a nice captive audience where we'd at least have to look at it periodically. And it had 10 wonderful character traits that this poster was trying to achieve in young people, and so I chose those character traits, those 10 different items, and found quotations that went along with it. So, for example, a teacher could be teaching honesty and integrity as her month's virtue or character trait, and then for the whole month there are 30 quotes that would support that she could be writing on the board each day. And another one of those character traits is teaching healthfulness. And so I have all sorts of quotes that go along with taking care of your body and having a healthy body. And something else is about charity. And so that was part of the inspiration for compiling these various quotes.
Error of opinion may be tolerated where reason is left free to combat it. Error of opinion may be tolerated where reason is left free to combat it. What they want to do, of course, is take away our right to be wrong. Of course, here they want to control what we think, control what we do, control what we believe. For fools rush in where angels fear to tread. The secret of success is constantly to propose. In other words, if you don't ever propose anything, you're never going to be successful. You may not always succeed, but at least you have to try. These are really wonderful quotations, Arlene.
Thank you.
And do you have a telephone number where people could call if they were interested in learning more about your book?
Yes, 707-539-8393. They can also go on our Eagle Forum website, and I also have a website just for the book.
All right, well, it's a great little book. It really has got some wonderful quotations in it, and maybe someday we'll just do an entire program on that. But right now, we have Roger calling from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you have a question or comment about, of course, Orleans' experience going to the NEA convention, where would they actually, of course, use this convention as a means of controlling educational policies in America, and, of course, look at the education our children are getting today. You could not do such a bad job unintentionally. And it's not the fault of the Democrats. It's not the fault of the Republicans. It's the fault of all of them. They're going right along with this. They're allowing the destruction of this effort for, you know, excellence. And, of course, we've replaced educating for excellence to educating for mediocrity, and we're succeeding wonderfully well. Let's go to Roger. Hi, Roger. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, and thanks. I hope I'm not being redundant. I'm scrambling looking for this clipping. Could you tell me, at the NEA confab or elsewhere, did you happen to discuss the new federal level it takes the money, you teach us the Constitution requirement, all that democracy. I don't know if they were reading off the sheet in the local newspaper article with all this wretched teaching of the Constitution.
Now, what was the question, Roger?
Well, new federal program where you have to teach the Constitution.
All right. Did they comment on this new program?
They didn't, but I'm glad that he asked that question because I think it's so important. They are not teaching the Constitution as it should be taught in our public schools, nor do they really even have any decent history books anymore. One of the best groups that is fighting this is EdWatch, and Alan Quist, who's put out a great book called Fed Ed, and then he's just recently come out with another excellent book that I have right in front of me. Just a minute. It's called America's Schools, and both of these teach what we really should be teaching under our Constitution and to respect it. But one of the worst books that I have had to teach from and what is now being used in many schools is called We the People. It looks like a great book, but it's not on the inside. You find the most amazing, really, I believe, anti-American philosophies. It was supposedly written to honor our Constitution, and when our nation was established as a nation, this was for the bicentennial, this book was then written, but it was written with taxpaying dollars by the Federal Department of Education supporting it, and it's doing just opposite. So if you have not ever heard of that book, Roger, I highly recommend that you get Alan Quist's book, Fed Ed, that exposes We the People and lets us know that it's terrible what's going on being taught about our Constitution today.
And, of course, the last thing they really want our children to know is the founding fathers of this country feared the power of government. I mean, they realized that the only way people could be free was to limit the government's power and their ability to control our lives and enslave our people. In fact, they had a revolt against Great Britain in 1776 because the English government was interfering with every aspect of their lives. Well, I will tell you that King George III is certainly a piker compared with the King George we have in Washington, D.C. today. Anything else you want to ask, Roger?
Yeah, now that We the People is at least a few years older, but have you seen or heard anyone comment on the newer course material that I'm assuming came down with this new requirement? And God bless.
Thanks very much. Do you know anything about is there a new requirements coming down now, Arlene?
Well, the national standards that Alan Quist talks about in his book, Fed Ed, are asking for the schools to teach respect for the Constitution, and we're supposed to be honoring September 17th as Constitution Day, but the history books don't teach respect for the Constitution themselves, and so where are they going to get this information from? I think it's just another way for the teachers to bring in some anti-American propaganda that's really undermining our Constitution and instead promoting global government. They're teaching more respect for the United Nations now than they are our own form of government.
Well, it's very interesting that when President Bush introduced Judge Roberts and announced he was going to, you know, nominate him to be the Supreme, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Judge Roberts got up and said, "I believe in a constitutional democracy." That's all he said. "I believe in a constitutional democracy." And he smiled, that beguiling smile he has. "I don't know what a constitutional democracy is. I've studied the Constitution, you know, for 50 years. We are not a democracy, we're a republic. Anybody who's ever studied our form of government knows we're a republic. Why would they be nominating somebody to become the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court who believes that we are a democracy?"
Amazing.
And, of course, the same, of course, I've told the story many times about when we had a personal meeting with George Bush. This was when he was still the governor. And the man sitting next to me said to him, "Governor Bush, if you were elected president and you were given a piece of legislation that had been passed by the House and the Senate and it was unconstitutional, would you sign it?" And George Bush looked at my friend and said, "I don't understand the question." So my friend repeated the question and said, you know, and there was a piece of legislation dealing with education, and the legislation was entirely unconstitutional, and under our Constitution, and you were asked to sign it, would you sign it? And the man who today is President of the United States, who nominated Judge Roberts, said, "I'm going to have to think about that. I'm going to have to go home and think about that. But thank you for asking. That's a very provocative question."
Oh, my.
I don't think you used the word provocative, but ladies and gentlemen, this is why we're in so much trouble today. We have a group of people who are totally illiterate, who do not understand our Constitution, who have been systematically dumbed down, and these people are in key positions in our government today. Some of them know exactly what they're doing. Others have never been educated. And that's why a good education, an understanding of the miracle of our Constitution is so important, and why those of you who listen to our programs regularly know that on a monthly basis we bring in somebody from the Institute of the Constitution. We talk about the importance of the Constitution. We talk about this inherent concept of fear of government. We talk about the fact that liberty and limited government are synonymous, and that tyranny and total government are synonymous, and that a government that can provide for you from the cradle to the grave has got to be able to control you from the cradle to the grave, and a government that can provide whatever you need, as you're a refugee, has to be able to take whatever you have. And people don't understand that. Our founding fathers feared government. We fought a revolutionary war to limit the power of government. And it would appear because, you know, they could not change our form of government through the legal means that they have appointed people to the Supreme Court, who, rather than amending our Constitution by the legal means as they should with the support of the people, have changed our form of government by judicial edict. All you need, of course, is a majority of the Supreme Court to establish a tyranny in America. And Thomas Jefferson said, you know, we have his master thoughts, you know, "I fear that the dissolution of our federal system of government is in the constitution of the federal judiciary, for a malevolent body working as a thief by night, taking a little here and a little there, until eventually all power will be centralized in Washington, D.C., and we will have a government as venal as that we were just recently separated from. And that's exactly what's happening today. Thomas Jefferson recognized that. And the fact that none of our commentators will tell the American people that, or will take them back to the writings of our founding fathers, is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. Well, when you left the convention there, Orlean, you left the this meeting with the people, these members of the NEA, the National Educational Association, what was your feeling? And what was the feeling of the good conservatives and the people who fear God who were there, who, you know, obviously would like to be able to teach our children the right sort of thing and aren't allowed to?
Well, some of them were so disappointed. They had hoped that they could at least be heard. At least sometimes then people will think about the truth and maybe they could have made a tiny little dent. But the fact that they were not even allowed to be heard, their resolutions were not presented before them. Some of them were just really discouraged, and a few have already dropped out and have joined another organization in California. But there are some stalwarts who are going to continue to hang in there and keep coming back and keep up their conservative caucus. The Republicans, who have dropped out of the Republican caucus because they're so upset with this lady who's taken over with her coup, a lot of them have joined the conservative caucus, so maybe it'll grow in number, and maybe they'll just keep hanging in there. They'll have some kind of an effect on it.
But you see, they'll infiltrate that as well. They have an agenda. They sit around and plot how they're going to do these things. They really want to take away our organizations, so we have no place to go.
That's really the truth. I was so upset with what went on. I spoke to the head of the Republican Assembly for California, and I said, is there any way that the Republicans could just not recognize the Republican caucus now at the NEA since it's been taken over by this coup? And he told me they've never recognized it anyway. You know, it's just kind of been a little entity all of its own. But I'm glad I had that one experience. I would never want to go back. 6 days being surrounded by 9,000 liberals was just too much. And I really did feel, I felt like I was on another planet. It was the strangest people and the strangest language and things going on. But I'm glad it was it was good to see what this was all about. And I'm glad that Phyllis Schlafly asked me to go. I'll be speaking on this subject here in St. Louis on Saturday morning to just let all of the people here have an idea what this was all about.
Well, you know, as you analyze what this is all about, of course, the difference in philosophy between the liberal who believes that government can solve our problems and the conservative who believes that the government is our problem. But, you know, this seems to be the way that most people look at it. Liberals on one side, conservatives on the other. But the truth of the matter is, there is a spiritual component to the liberal beliefs, this idea of wanting to give all power to government and replacing a belief in God with replacing a belief in government, that government can somehow provide for us. And really, it's when people lose their faith in God that they turn to government. And there is really a conspiracy against God in our country today. That is the basis of the Anti-Christian Lawyers Union, the ACLU. And that is the basis of the ADL and the ADA, Anti-Defamation League. They're not, you know, just anti-Christian. They're anti-God. They're anti-the God of the Bible. And
true.
When you understand that, you can begin to understand so much of what's going on today. That's why they had to take God and prayer out of our schools. That's why they had to take God's law, the Ten Commandments, which is the foundation of our freedom, out of our schools. They could bring in the Earth Charter, which, according to Gorbachev, that great American patriot, is to be the new Ten Commandments. But we couldn't have, you know, the old Ten Commandments taught there. So
that's really the truth. In the book that I wrote, The Golden Rule School, I quote from some of our founding fathers and also an interesting man by the name of Will Durant, who wrote a book about world civilizations, and he says in his very first volume that it takes four things to make a civilization and to keep it in existence. There has to be a form of government, there has to be an economic system, But there, and then there has to be a form of education to pass on to the next generation what you feel is important. But there has to be a form of morality based on religion. And if any one of those four things disappears, then so goes the civilization. And I presented that to my world history class and my English class, and I asked them, which of these four things do you think is going in our nation today? They all said morality. So even these students recognized it as well, and I think that that's one of the agendas of the NEA. If they can get rid of the morality of our nation, so goes our civilization, so goes our government. And if you want to have a one-world powerful government, then you've got to get rid of the government of the United States of America, which has been the beacon of light to the world of freedom and liberty and of responsible limited government.
And that's why, of course, it's so important to treat evolution, because if evolution is true, the Bible is a lie. Well, I believe that evolution is a lie. I believe the Bible is true. And I base my life and my beliefs on that. But you see, there is a conspiracy against God. And once you understand that, why, it's very easy to understand all the other conspiracies out there.
That's true.
Well, Arlene, we've got about 3 minutes for you to wrap up this evening's program.
Well, I appreciate your letting me talk about this experience. I just wanted people to know what the National Education Association is all about and the California Teachers Association. I got a call from the lady who actually invited me to come as her guest just this evening, and she told me that she was there with a group protesting what the CTA is now doing in Sacramento. The CTA actually mortgaged their building so that they would have $63 million to fight Governor Schwarzenegger's proposals to try to get teachers' unions and the dues not going towards political causes, and then also to make it so that teachers would have a 5-year before they receive their tenure. And the CTA is really fighting this. Anyway, they not only have mortgaged their building, but they've also raised the dues of all of their members. And according to this lady who called me, she said that that this has been ruled to be against the law. And so they're really happy about that. You'll probably hear about this in the newspapers tomorrow, we hope, anyway.
In other words, the judges have found that they cannot utilize their money that's taken in, you know, for political purposes without the permission of the people.
That's right.
Gave it, right. And, of course, they have a political agenda. And, of course, they want to maintain this myth that we've got a two-party system, and certainly that all the liberals and the Democrats are lining up against Governor Schwarzenegger. And certainly I want people to know that I think that the things he is suggesting are the solutions. I don't necessarily like Arnold, but I will tell you that the things he is suggesting are what need to be done if we are going to try to save California. And I'm certainly going to support these basic tenets that are out there. But they're mobilizing the liberals on one side, the conservatives are on the other, and nobody's really talking about what the real issues are.
That's really the truth. If people would like to get a copy of the article that I wrote about my experience, you can go on the California website. It's eagleformofcalifornia.com.
eagleformofcalifornia.com.
And the title of my article is The Exciting Saga of Conservative Warriors versus the Liberal Battlestar NEA.
All right, fine. Of course, which I have to understand, it's a one-sided battle. They have all the power. They have their people in key positions. They do not allow the other side to be hurt. That's what's
right.
Known as democracy. God bless you, Arlene.
Thank you so much.
And
God bless you as well.
And please give my best to Phyllis.
Thank you. I certainly will do that. Thank you for having me as your guest.
Good night. God bless. Bye-bye. All right, fine. That was Arlene Coulomb talking about the NEA. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and my guest this evening, Arlene Coulomb. I hope you enjoyed the program. Remember, her website is Eagle Forum of California, all spelled out, eagleforumofcalifornia.com, if you'd like to get her article on her experiences going to the NEA meeting. Now, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there listening to us, we hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to accomplish what we do being on the air 5 hours a day, and of course we have to purchase radio time. And this is, of course, gives us the opportunity to talk to people, not only across America, but throughout the world by the miracle of shortwave and the Internet. So we do hope that many of you will decide you'd like to become part of the Radio Liberty family. And if you would or would like to know more about us, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And, of course, you can listen to our programs there 5 hours a day on the Internet. Then you can listen on the archive programs another 4 or 5 or 6 or 8 hours a day, and you won't get a thing accomplished, but you will get a lot of education, a lot of good sound information that you're not going to get through other channels. And, of course, we hope maybe you can spend an hour a day listening to our programs, or 2 hours a day. You can, of course, get our shortwave frequencies, and the programs are broadcast 4 hours a day on shortwave. We hope you'll tell other people about our programs, and because our basic tenet is this. We're involved in a spiritual battle, being fought on a political and ideological battlefield. There have been, since the beginning of time, secret societies. They centered around the mystery religions and the secret knowledge that has been passed down through the ages. And what is that secret knowledge? That Lucifer is the real God. And Lucifer wants his followers to form a one-world government and destroy Christianity, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and, of course, to destroy both the Jews and the Christians. And this is exactly what's going on in Israel today. That's why the American government has forced Israel to withdraw from Gaza, will force them to withdraw from the West Bank, to put them behind the wall, and where they'll be easily destroyed in the coming war. And if you listen to our programs, you'll begin to understand that everything is part of a master plan. We'll give you the source of that information. And if you haven't seen Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, the videos are... or Joe Schimmel's wonderful videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. They sold their souls for rock and roll. Let me recommend that you get the information, and there's so much material. We hope you'll go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. If you'd like to get a free copy of one of our newsletters about who really runs the world. There is an occult hierarchy. How do we know? Why, we read their newsletters. We record their information. We read their books, and we simply tell you what they say. The information you're never going to hear from Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or certainly the other people who are working for the establishment. So, once again, if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, The Occult Hierarchy, call us at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and then please pray for America, pray for our leaders, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.